Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that head-banging music means it's time for one thing and one thing only, Sparty Talk. Welcome to your podcast about all things Michigan State sports and whatever else we feel like talking about. I am Satchmo. I'm joined by the one, the only, the Thin Man, DB. Greetings, DB.
Greetings and salutations, Spartan Nation.
Yeah, it is a good time. Football season is starting. And speaking of head-banging music, you know, we saw a lot of headbanging on the field at Spartan Stadium.
Yes, we did. We saw the fans banging their heads too, Satchmo.
Yeah, we saw the fans banging their heads. All right, so we got a lot to talk about. We got a lot to talk about. Michigan State, you know, won the game. That's pretty much the only thing that matters. They won 16-10. And so they did. And, you know, we've got, like, questionable calls. We've got bad officiating. I mean, we got really bad officiating.
Yes.
We can dive into the bad officiating. We've got injuries, which are going to affect the rest of the season. Holy cow. How can we ever make it through a season without, like, massive injuries that are just derail the whole thing? You know, we've got some good and we've got some bad to talk about. So we've got a lot of ground to cover. But we're going to begin this show with something, you know, that has nothing to do with any of this. What is the phrase the kids use now? Pull the kimono back? Is that what they say now? Pull open the kimono? In the old days, it'd be pull the curtain back. Before the show started, CB and I were talking, and, you know, I mentioned, and I got me some XM Sirius satellite radio, or is it Sirius XM? I can never figure out which way. Look, I think it's Sirius XM, regardless. And I've been listening to Mad Dog Russo a little bit because I'm originally from the New Jersey, New York area, and if you're from the New Jersey, New York area, you love you some doggy. DB's like, well, you got to listen to Howard Stern now. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I got to listen to Stern. Stern is, you know, shock radio genius. I mean, he and Imus were, you know, they hated each other. They went head to head. I mean, it's just, I mean, that was the heyday of radio, DB. And then we got into a discussion because we couldn't figure it out because I joked. I said, I'll listen to Stern when he actually works because Stern, you know, he's like 90% retired now. He shows up when he wants, does a few shows, and goes back. And then you brought up interesting, like Johnny Carson. Now we're trying to figure out who actually worked more closer to their retirement age, Stern or Johnny Carson.
Well, you know, in all seriousness, and I don't, Johnny's a little before us, but I do remember when he was older, and I think that he I think that he was phoning it in by the end. It was like a 2 or 3 day work week. And honestly, Satchmo, Howard is in that same area. He's actually maybe taking more time off.
Yeah, I tend to think so. I think Howard takes more time off, but he's actually funnier when he's working. So when he actually shows up in studio and the mic goes on, he's good. His wit is there, and he's quick, and he's nimble, and he's funny. He just isn't there all that often, where I think Johnny was probably there more often, but not all there.
Right. Johnny was really phoning it in. And Howard, when he's there, is like he's still, you know, putting on a show, and Howard's turned into a fantastic interviewer, essentially.
Yeah, because Howard does something that's really unusual. I mean, highly unusual in this age of interviewing and talking to the people and things like that. He actually listens to what they say. And I know this should not be groundbreaking, but it is in that he listens to what they say. And then based on what they say, he asks more questions. He's not working off a preset of list preset list of questions and topics he needs to get to. He's actually listening to what they say, regardless of whether he's interested or not. He's listening to what they say and asking questions that follow up on that, you know, trying to get to an interesting nugget. And if it's really boring, he just asks whatever the hell he wants to try and get them to say something interesting. But he actually listens to what they say and tries to get them to be entertaining and engage on an entertainment level based on what they're saying, as opposed to, you know, working off some script or, you know, some set of questions that someone's handed to you. And the radio host, the podcast host, the whatever host you want that actually listen to you and then engage with what you're saying, they're much more interesting than the people that just have a bunch of questions they want to ask.
Right, exactly.
There's no fanboying in Howard.
Right.
Has he ever interviewed Jim Harbaugh?
No, I don't think so. Howard doesn't. You have to be like a really, like, you know, mega celebrity. Tom Brady's been on there when you're thinking of you know, Michigan people. But his sports people are limited to. They have to be like major celebrities.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise, Howard Stern is just not going to get out of bed for Jim Harbaugh.
He doesn't know who he is. Probably doesn't care.
Yeah, but Tom Brady is actually, look, I don't like Tom Brady.
No, actually,
I don't either. I did dislike Tom Brady. In fact, when Tom Brady does his NFL debut, I'm probably going to hate watch it. Just so I can tweet mean things about his, you know, announcing gig.
Yeah.
And I just hope, you know, Brady mispronounces names and makes all sorts of mistakes and gives me lots of material to work with.
Right.
But Stern is so good that he can make Brady seem human and funny.
Yes. Right, exactly. Yes. It'd be worth listening to just because of the person interviewing him, you know, right? And Howard Stern... amazingly, like, you know, I mean, he was never a bad interviewer, just, you know, he's worked on his craft, which is great. Like he could have just been like phoning it in, you know, for the last 10 years. And since he's been on Sirius, he's really, really improved, and he's gotten so many A-list people to come on his show sometime.
Yeah. No, he's fantastic. Is there anyone else that we feel fall in this sort of pantheon of really good interviewers? And part of the reason they're a really good interviewer is they actually listen to what you say.
I'm thinking here, and you know, one that comes to mind is Seth Meyers.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good interviewer. He really listens to what the guests are saying and does good follow-ups. I don't know. I could be missing a lot of people. How about you?
Yeah, I'm trying to think whether we're missing anyone really good. I mean, Stern was the obvious one. I'll tell you who's sort of pretty good on the sports side of this. Well, I guess not just the sports side. Anyway, it's Dan Le Batard.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Le Batard's really good because he listens to what you say, and then he comes up with stuff that builds on it and takes a point that the person is trying to make and builds it out even more. Maybe he takes it to his logical conclusion. Maybe it doesn't. And then doesn't assume he's right, but gets his guests to expand on the point using that framework to see if he's even going in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, Le Batard's are really good on that front. So anyway, just, you know, something to think about for everyone. and if you get a chance to, you know, Get yourself some Sirius XM. Yeah, you can give Stern a listen. The interviews are 100% worth it.
Yep.
He's just He's just fantastic. All right, on to Michigan State, and, you know, we kind of did the detour because, man, that game was frustrating, wasn't it? The Jonathan Smith era is underway, and it opened with a 16-10 victory over Florida Atlantic. That 16-10 victory could easily have been a 31-3 victory for Michigan State. It also easily could have been a 17-16 loss.
Yes. I had a feeling it was going to be for a while there. So, no.
Yeah, it did. It just looked bad. And so there were a lot of things that were going on here. And so let's run through some of them. And let's start on the defensive side of the ball, Davey. What are your initial impressions of the Michigan State defense? And let's compare and contrast it, shall we say, to the Mel Tucker era.
Well, I saw a defense for the first time in a while. I think my eyes had to go back to Mark D'Antonio, to where I saw a defensive line getting at the quarterback and guys hitting people really hard. And the middle of the defense is looking really good. And I thought, you know, again, we're talking about a Florida Atlantic team that's not very seasoned, but even the Spartans defenses of the past, you know, few years have struggled with teams like Florida Atlantic. And I thought the defense was terrific. I mean, I loved what I saw. This is the one thing that I think you're going to find, as you said before, Satchmo, you know, when you have a defense like this, you know, even if the Spartans lose, they're going to make you pay. The defense will make you pay.
Yes. I mean, for a long time, you know, and this goes back to the Mark D'Antonio era, it goes back to the George Perlis era, it goes back to Duffy Doherty, it goes back to Biggie Munn, it goes back to pick your Spartan coach outside of maybe John L.
We didn't play defense
then. But you know, there was always this idea, or win or lose, you would remember playing Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
And you would remember because the Michigan State defense hit you so hard, even if you lost the game, it took you twice as long to recover. And if you take a look at the record, someday I'll have to do this. This is, you know, maybe I can get ChatGPT or AI or something to do this. But if you go back and examine the records of teams that played after Michigan State, or I mean their record after they played, the week after they played Michigan State, mm-hmm. I'm going to guess it's far worse than any other common opponent or any other opponent they might have had.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, and this is a historical fact. This is something that other Big Ten coaches have talked about in the past. This is not something we're making up because we see the road through green-colored glasses, but it's just the way it's always been. And, yeah, I tend to agree with that. This was a hard-hitting defense that we saw on Friday night, or in my case, when I watched the game today, because I recorded it.
That's all right.
That's all right. I watched it. That's what counts.
Yeah. You got. Yes. You got to do what you got to do. Yes.
Got to do what I got to do. Exactly. And so yeah. It was a hard hitting defense. There were two or three coverage busts. One came on the Florida Atlantic touchdown where two defensive mm-hmm. backs went to the running back and turned the wide receiver free. And it was one of those crossing routes. It was one of those routes where the receivers crossed in front of each other. And so mm-hmm. the defensive backs had to communicate. All right, I'm staying with him because you got to stay with this guy, or who's covering the deep and who's covering the shallow. And that was a complete lack of communication. The other big coverage bust that I remember came in the fourth quarter, DB. And I don't know if you remember this play, but Florida Atlantic sprung a receiver down the middle of the field, and he was just wide open. I think D'Angelo Gross might have been on the coverage and ran into him and fell down. Let me tell you what, if this was a quarterback that could actually throw the ball, that was six. And now we're talking a completely different ballgame because, man, he was wide open. He was 10 yards behind the defense.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was going to be six. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. So definitely hard hitting. And like many Spartan defenses and so that's an area that needs to be cleaned up. Maybe it's sort of game one jitters. But also, this has been a Spartan secondary that over the course of the last 4 to 5 years has been plagued by such breakdowns. And so now we need to see whether this is just game one jitters and things improve, or, you know, there's going to be two or three coverage busts a game and hopefully the other team doesn't take advantage of it. But like other Spartan defenses of the past, DB, this particular team or this particular week, they had some issues with the discipline. And part of that is the sort of unorthodox style in which the FAU quarterback slid.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Tell you what, talk about taking advantage of the rules. I mean, this guy would wait until Spartan defenders were in midair before going, yeah, I'll give myself up now.
Yeah.
That drove me nuts.
Yeah, and also talk about putting yourself at a major injury risk. I mean, that guy, he got hit in the head several times. And what I know we're going to get into this, but I'm just going to bring it up right now. I know that some of those things are supposed to be avoided by the defense, but when a guy is flying towards someone, how in the world do you stop yourself in midair from not landing on the guy or hitting him when he's down like that?
It's impossible. Or if you're targeting like the numbers or the midsection and you go into your tackle and then this guy slides, all of a sudden, you're hitting them in the head when you thought you were hitting them in the numbers.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we had Mike, what's his name, ref in the box?
Mike Pereira.
Yeah, Mike Pereira is on there saying, you know, I heard the word defenseless about 80 times. And I'm like, okay, he's putting himself into a defenseless position. It's one thing if you just drill the guy when he's trying to throw a pass and, like, hit him in the head to head. That's no-no. But I'm cutting the Spartan defense a little slack here because, okay, they're going to have to get used to that with – they're going to have to watch that with quarterbacks who do that. And maybe that's the only one like that we're going to see all year. I don't know because, again, when a quarterback is sliding that much he's really putting himself – I mean, his bell got rung. By the end of the game, it seemed like that Fincher, the FAU quarterback, he couldn't feel his left hand.
Yeah, no, he's – yeah, he put himself in harm's way consistently all of the time. I mean, it was consistently all the time. There's a redundancy. He consistently put himself in harm's way. And it was ridiculous. Look, you don't want to see a player get hurt. You just don't want to see a player get hurt. We did not want to see the FAU quarterback get hurt. But then on the other hand, it was inevitable.
Yes.
It was inevitable. Right. I mean, he's running 100 miles per hour, and then he's about to get hit, and then he puts himself in a defensive position as he's about to get hit to see if he can pick up another 15 yards.
Yeah. And two things I noticed there with the sliding. One is, when I saw him pull that move at the end of the game, finally, a Spartan defender or two adjusted to that and jumped over the top of him.
Yeah.
Yay. Okay. So, well, the message got through, even though that was a crappy way to go through it. The second thing was, the irony of all ironies and all that sliding in the whole game was, he slid short of the first down on fourth down when they had a chance to keep the ball, and that basically handed the game mercilessly back over to the Spartans.
You're 100% right. That is the irony of all ironies. Let's call it karmic justice, shall we?
Uh,
Yeah. It is the irony of all ironies is that he slid short. And if he just stayed on his feet, he probably would have picked up the first down, and we might be having a different conversation right now.
Yeah, we'd be – who knows if we would be talking about a win right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that covers – so the secondary looked good.
Yes.
The secondary looked good. They seemed to cover. But this is a limited FAU team with a quarterback that can't throw the ball. And
right.
All right. We got to talk about these announcers for a second before we keep going.
Oh. Ooh.
Was this the worst announcing crew Michigan State's ever had? I mean.
It was pretty close. Some of these announcers are so unlistenable. Yeah.
The game was almost – all right, I'll give the color analyst some credit. He was right a lot of the time on some of the calls and all that sort of stuff. So just from a quality of information standpoint, some of it was there. But it started in the very beginning because they were pumping up the big storyline, you know, about Jonathan Smith in the first game of the MSU coach. And then Jonathan Smith doesn't lead Michigan State out of the tunnel. He's like, yeah, I don't do that. He said, players come out, I'll join you guys later. And it's like the Big Ten crew had no idea. I mean, the Big Ten network had no idea that Jonathan Smith wasn't going to lead the team out. Then they had no idea what to say. And then they're talking about Jonathan Smith, and they can't find him to show him on camera.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, well, that's where you got to pivot to what you're actually seeing. You know, then you talk about here comes the Spartans and, you know, right. It's too pre-prepared sometimes. It's too pre-scripted.
Too canned. And then you got this guy saying, oh, the stadium, campus is rocking and the stadium's great. And everyone's excited. And this guy, man, sounds like he's reading a dissertation without Adderall. And it's just...
That's a good one.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. It's bad.
I mean, it's okay to be dry, but you can't be dry and bad. Like,
yeah,
you can be dry
and
funny. You can be dry and accurate, but I mean, he was dry and boring.
Yeah, I mean, I've realized what with so much content out there for sports broadcasting all over everything. That the quality of announcing has gotten steadily worse. I mean, it's even the announcers that are sort of considered to be A-list announcers on networks are not always really that good.
Yeah, no, they're not always really that good. It's just,
no.
I mean, now maybe it's first game stuff and things like that, but you have ref in the box, Mike Pereira talking over the referee on the interception reversal. That just didn't go over well. And then you actually have Pereira complaining about how many times he had to show up on camera during the game. He's like, well, I just might as well sit here.
Yeah, I guess you
didn't
want to do it.
Jeez, I'm sorry we interrupted your Papa John's, Mike.
Well, also, too, the ref's microphone didn't work for, like, the first half. So every time he did a... Yeah, I mean, come on, Big Ten Network. I mean, get your act together here. I mean, it's ridiculous.
The color analyst was, you know, still lacked excitement. You want a little pizzazz for college football. But he at least he was good. At least he knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, right.
And by the way, either get these guys a spotter or make sure they know who the players are. Or get them a better spotter.
God. Yeah,
man,
yeah,
late. They were late on names, and it's like they had no idea who was on the field.
Yeah, and sometimes they were wrong about either the penalty that was called or about to be called. They were predicting wrong. You know, I think they were calling that ill-fated slide by Fincher a first down. And, oh, boy, this is trouble for Michigan State. And I don't, if they were looking at the field from their perch in the press box, which they should be able to see from up there, that he was short. I mean, come on, guys.
Yeah. Come on, guys. Mm-hmm. Let's get let's get with it. And then on the targeting, no targeting thing, you had the color analyst talk about it. Oh, it was a forearm shiver. He spent 10 minutes talking about it was a forearm shiver of the head, only when it reversed. Like, oh, yeah, you want to know what? I always thought that was into the shoulder anyway.
I heard that.
Come on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we definitely got the guys auditioning for the Big Ten Network app or something Friday night.
Yeah, you bet. And then you had Alante Brown had a great punt return, right? So the punt return team comes out again, and it is Montari Foster out there on the return, and they're like, Montari Foster on the return, and the color, and it's like, oh, yeah, I remember seeing Alante Brown go into the injury tent. Well, how about reporting that in real time, dude?
Right. Did they have a sideline reporter? I don't recall that they did.
They did have a sideline reporter, which makes it even worse.
Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness.
If you did see Alante Brown go into the injury tent, here's how the play-by-play should go. Montari Foster in for in because Alante Brown's apparently injured in the injury tent. We'll see how the senior wide receiver does. Right? That's what you say. Mm-hmm. That's not what they said. Montari Foster with the return, and he's like, yeah, I remember seeing Alante Brown go into the injury tent.
Mm.
Just bad.
Yeah, it's very bad. Yep. Yeah. Well, there's always the mute button, Satchmo. I've watched plenty of games when the announcers got to be too bad. Gone are the days of Brent Musburger. Even Gus Johnson now. I used to love Gus Johnson's enthusiasm, but I feel like Gus Johnson is dragged down by that other guy. I forget his name.
Trent Klatt.
Yeah. Oh, man. Like, it's just, it doesn't work. It's a bad combination. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. There's nothing more we can say about the announcers.
Yeah.
It was bad. It was bad. It really made the broadcast unwatchable. I will give the broadcasters credit for this, though. They did talk about the sliding and the unorthodox sliding and how that was a problem. And how how the coaches identified that was going to be a problem going into the game, which meant as bad as they were, someone there did their homework.
It probably was an intern. That's the only explanation I have for that because, very bad.
The rest of it was bad. All right. All right, let's go to the offensive side of the ball. The debut.
Yeah.
The debut of Aiden Chatz. What did we think of the young fella?
Well, I he can move. He had 114 rushing. The guy can run, and he's got an arm. He's got a cannon. He just has to, I think, I honestly just say lots of first game nerves. He's 18. He's 18 years old.
He's 18 years old.
He had
114 throwing. He had 114 throwing and 28 rushing. But, he can move.
Yeah, he can move. Sorry, I had that backwards. He had 114 throwing. But I got to tell you, where were the receivers? Like, I feel like one thing that was going on a little bit was I don't think that they were creating good separation all the time. I know that we had some gaffes with the football. That was a bugaboo on a bunch of people's parts in the game. But, it looked like I wasn't seeing. I think there's a lot of potential there with the receivers, but they need a lot of work.
Yes, a lot of work is a good way to describe it. I'm with you. You're right. He's 18.
Yeah,
holy
he's
cow.
18.
He's
yeah.
18 freaking years old.
Yeah. Yep. This is a big ask, and you're asking him to take over a program and a power conference that where the fans are just dying to have some good quarterback and something good happen, and it's a load of pressure for a kid to take that on. And
yes.
He's not like a senior. He's, you know, but I think he has a lot of potential.
I think he's, and you got to love the way he took accountability after the game. He says, I was bad. It was my fault. This one's on me.
And that's unfair to do to himself. I mean, look, other people fumbled the ball. The other guy I love is Lynch, the running back, the transfer from UMass. I mean, man, that guy, talk about, I was thinking beast mode, like Marshawn Lynch. I mean,
oh, yeah.
He's wow. Kerron Lynch Adams, man, I'll tell you, he had a 63-yard touchdown run. I mean,
yes, he did.
Offensive line has improved a bit. I don't know about the pass blocking, but a little bit. There was some moments where they looked like they were wearing down and tired.
Okay. So, all right. So here's my take on, first of all, I'm with you on Kerron Lynch Adams. Yep, he had that 63-yard touchdown run, 101 yards overall. Nate Carter, 19 carries for 48 yards. Not good, but he did get a 12-yard run in there. You know, Jerron Glover got a carry for six. And Aiden Childs, you know, six carries, 28 yards. So here's my thing on the offensive line. Is that center that transferred from Oregon State is really good.
Yeah.
I mean, really, really good. He transferred, and he immediately became Michigan State's best offensive lineman.
Yeah.
And it's not even close. The difference between him and the rest of the offensive line is like the Grand Canyon. It's just that thing.
Yeah.
Right? It just is. The guards, they're maybe league average. So when you combine the center and the guards, all right, now you got something. Now you got something up the middle. Those tackles, DB, they can't block a lick, at least not in run blocking. Mm-hmm. Pass blocking, I think they're a little better. But run blocking, there is no gain in the yard if you're running off tackle, that's for sure.
Well, that's what happened on – well, that's one thing I was going to bring up was – there was that 4th-and-1 play when they were in FAU territory and they went for it. And whoever ran that ball, I think it was Lynch, they just got swallowed up by the FAU defense. It was just ran into the player portal, the transfer portal.
I'll tell you what, not only did the tackle on that side, they had like three big dudes that they brought in to block, and two of them whiffed on the player that made the tackle.
Yes.
So it's like, kind of like the play design, but man, someone missed something there.
Yeah.
I mean, that was more than getting beat on a block. That was ole. Yeah. That was, you know, that was bullfighting territory.
That was Pamplona, baby. It was like, get out of the way for the giant bull there. Yeah. So, yeah.
it was
great.
Bad. So they went for it on 4th down a couple times.
Yeah, they did.
They picked up one, which I thought was a really questionable spot, but they got the benefit of the doubt on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they picked up one. They obviously missed the other. Everyone's killing the coaching staff, but we'll get back to coaching in a minute. Everyone's killing the coach. We'll get back to the quarter offense in a minute, but I just want to bring this up. Everyone's killing the coaching staff for going for it on 4th down. And I'm here to defend the coaching staff.
Same.
Something I rarely do. I'm here to defend the coaching staff on this, and here's why.
I agree.
Field goal, yes. A field goal there makes it 19-10, makes it a 2-possession game. Florida Atlantic's not going to score 10 points the way the Michigan State defense is playing you with the game. So 100% get why everyone's like, oh, you kicked a field goal. All right, 100% get it. But I don't care. And the reason I don't care is that, all right, Jonathan Smith knows he doesn't have the horses to win a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
He just knows. So what are you trying to do right now? You are trying to establish your identity and culture. This is the same mm-hmm. thing Dan Campbell did when he got to the Lions. Right?
Exactly.
He knew he was going to lose 15 games. All right?
Mm-hmm.
But he was going to go for it on fourth down anyway because
yeah.
there was no difference between losing 15 and losing 13. What he
yeah.
wanted to do was establish an identity and a culture mm-hmm. that says we're aggressive, we're here to win, we're going for it, we're going to do it this way.
Yes.
And, you know, and you like the math because if they get the first down there, you know, or they get the touchdown, they get the first down, whatever, game overtime, clock
yeah.
runs out, all
yeah.
of that sort of stuff. And the math says go for it more often on fourth down anyway. So I like all of that. And if that's going to be the identity of the program moving forward, I'm fine with that. The other reason I'm fine with that is there's 61 new players on this roster, DB.
Yes.
Donald
yeah.
Smith doesn't know what he's got. And the only
right,
way
exactly.
you're going to find out what you got is to do this, and it's better
right.
to do this against Florida Atlantic than it is to try and figure it out against Boston College.
Right. Yeah, yeah, you're damn straight about all that, Satchmo. I agree. And this is a new coaching staff, and exactly right. They're trying to figure out what they got. And look, I don't question that at all. Also, you also know, and Jonathan Smith is not stupid, Florida Atlantic's offense is not Oregon, and also your defense is playing really well. So, granted, you don't want to put everything on the defense's shoulders because we saw that a lot
yeah.
sometimes in the Mark D'Antonio era, and sometimes that didn't work out very well. But at the same time, right, give these kids a chance and go for it. I didn't question any of it at all. Like, you know what? Let's see what we're made of. Let's see what we got. What we got in a game like this. Because you might be more reluctant to do that when you're out in Eugene October 4th, you know, depending
yeah.
on the situation, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. It's just like, well, let's see what you got. And so
mm-hmm.
now he knows. Now he knows he can't run outside to pick up a yard, right? If
right.
you're going to pick up the yard, look, if this is going to be your identity and your culture and you're going to live and die being this aggressive and going for a fourth down, which I'm okay with, all right, then run it to the strength
mm-hmm.
of what you do best, which is behind your big center and not your
right.
left tackle, right? And so
yeah.
now we're learning things. Or you throw the ball because this still does not look like a Michigan State offensive line that can pick up the tough yard when they need it. They can
right.
pick up a big run here or there. They can pick up some nice runs
mm-hmm.
when – they're in the rhythm of the offense. The defense doesn't know whether it's going to be a run or a pass. But
yeah.
when it comes down to picking up the tough yard and, you know, third and short, fourth and short, and people loaded up, this isn't the offensive line. Not yet. It might become
yeah.
this year, next year, whatever, but not
yeah.
now.
Right. I agree. And I wanted to ask you a question, too. What do you think about Nate Carter? What are your thoughts?
It's hard to run when you're getting hit when you get the ball.
Yeah, I was getting some sense that some of Spartan Nation is a little impatient with him, unfairly.
Yep.
You know, not recognizing this offensive line, lack of a better word, Not ready for prime time yet completely.
Yeah.
And I think Nate Carter is not the same type of back as Lynch. You know, Lynch
no.
is beast mode. Nate Carter is that guy that he can chew up some yards for you or you know, short yardage. But what he can do is if he gets out in the open, he has speed.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, he's definitely a homer. Nick Carter's also the guy that if everything is blocked correctly,
yeah,
is going to hit the hole. He's going to hit it hard. He's going to be physical. He'll get you those 2 or 3 yards that
yeah.
you really need. Whereas K'Ron Lynch Adams feels more like he feels more like a home run hitter. But the other thing about, I mean, I know you talk about Nate Carter's speed. I think K-Ron looks out of, K-Ron has a little wiggle to him. And that little wiggle to him helps him avoid some of the stuff that's in the backfield.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think he's got the vision that Carter does.
Right.
Where, you know, he sees the scheme, he sees the block, he knows which hole he's got to hit and all that sort of stuff. I think K-Ron's going to end up being the number one back, DB. And I think reason he's going to end up being the number one back is because he's got that little bit of wiggle to him, and the defenders hitting him in the backfield, he's like, all right, I'll just make this guy miss and get back to the line of scrimmage and pick up that 1 yard. And Nate Carter doesn't necessarily have that. But Nate Carter's got a lot of other skills, and if you get it blocked up right, he's probably going to pick up more yards per carry than K'Ron Lynch Adams, but right now it's not getting blocked up right.
Right. Right, yeah, exactly. To your point earlier, you know, Nate Carter's trying to turn the corner on the outside. I can see him looking at that hole, but there is no hole because those tackles aren't able to produce a hole yet.
Yes.
Yeah.
He says, I'm running where the hole is supposed to be, but it ain't there.
Right. And so that's what happens. And so, you know, hopefully as time goes on, you know, things will clean up there. But, you know, I mean, I like Nate Carter, and I just think, you know, like, he's a solid stand-up guy. He looks like he's you know, like, bulked a little bit, you know, like he's added some muscle. And I just think that, you know, you don't often find a player that he seems like a mentally strong guy that, you know, those guys are a premium. You know, he's going to, all the effort's going to be there all the time, no matter what.
Yeah.
He's not going to give up, basically. And so let's be easy on Nate Carter, folks.
Agreed. And by the way, speaking of not giving up, how about the Spartan effort when Aiden Childs threw that pick, that interception in the red zone?
Yeah.
Let me tell you what. Most quarterbacks around the country, that's a pick six.
Yeah.
Aiden Childs and some other player, and I don't remember who it was, they went back and they slowed that guy down and waited for help and made sure he didn't score.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's
that
about all you can do.
Effort.
Yeah, they.
Yeah,
that was serious effort. It was very good. It's little things like that in the game that even though that was just a very unfortunate mistake, it's little things like that where, you know, you can admire, okay, this has a different feel to it. You know, like the quarterback, it would have been very easy for him to hang his head and just stand there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you figure out, okay, I got to go at least try to prevent this guy from scoring, and you know, maybe the defense will help, and that's what happened.
Yeah, and now I liked what you said about the lack of separation from the Michigan State receiving corps. They were. I mean, FAU's got some decent corners, but I mean, there really should have been at least a little more separation than that, and I think that lack of separation combined with some Aiden Childs inaccuracy, there were some deep balls that he missed. First interception was thrown way too far inside. The second interception, you know, he got baited into throwing that. And so, and there were a couple other times where he just missed people on the wrong side and didn't put the ball where. But then there are other times with Childs where, you know, you saw the receiver get separation, the ball get in there on time. That was good, layering in some passes and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I'm with you. There was a disturbing lack of separation. And when there was separation, the ball wasn't delivered accurately. So there was a lot of stuff going on there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think in time they could clean that up. But, you know, I think patience is going to be required on the parts of us in the fans stands.
Yeah, I agree. I think Montori Foster settled down after a slow start, and he started to get a little bit of separation. Alante Brown, of course, got hurt. I think this tight end, Jack Belling, is going to end up being really good. and find a role in the offense. And Nick Marsh just got the one catch. We'll see. I think there's a there. This is going to take some time. And I think part of the problem is that offensive line is, look, this has been a problem, this offensive line, since the end of the D'Antonio era, right up until now.
Yes.
This has been a serious problem. And it's interesting. If you talk about roster construction in the current era, how do you construct a roster, right? Everyone is gung-ho on the transfer portal. Just go into the transfer portal. Get someone. That's the answer for everything. Go into the transfer portal and get someone. And look, like Dabo Sweeney in Clemson's an idiot, right? We know that, right? He just refuses to go into the transfer portal and get anyone.
Yeah.
Right?
That's too far the other way.
But I think when you think about modern day roster construction, I think you got to look at the following ways. Is the closer they are to the ball, the harder it is to get someone good in the transfer window. I feel like in the transfer portal, I feel like quarterbacks are easy to get. I feel like wide receivers are easy to get. Then the next easy position is defensive back. But once you start getting into offensive linemen and defensive linemen, getting good offensive linemen and good defensive linemen are incredibly difficult in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Incredibly difficult. The only reason we got the guy from Oregon State is he followed his coach. Otherwise, he wasn't coming here. But it is incredibly difficult. It's incredibly difficult to get offensive tackles. It's incredibly difficult to get interior linemen because college coaches know that you win and lose with those two.
And everybody's going after those guys.
Yeah. Never mind everyone's going after them. Everyone's trying to keep them.
Yes, that too.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. They're like, you quarterback, you go. I don't need any of your shit. Yeah. Right? They're like 100 high school quarterbacks that I can come in and recruit that, man, maybe they might be 10% worse than you. But 10% worse than you, I can still win 12 games. But if I get 10% worse on the offensive line, I go from winning 12 games to winning 5 games.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely.
That's
right.
That's what's going on. So if you're going to construct a roster, you have to do it by recruiting the best possible offensive linemen and defensive linemen who are not only great, but who want to play and stay in that school and stick it out because you can't afford to lose them to the transfer portal because you can't replace them.
That's right.
And they got to play together as a group for years. They got to develop chemistry. You can't bring in all these people. I mean, look at Colorado, man. All that player turnover, they can't get an offensive line or defensive line to save their asses. And the reason is you can't build the offensive line and defensive line through the transfer portal. You just can't do it.
Yep, exactly. I mean, when you look at some of the best college teams or even the best pro teams, the one common denominator there is strong offensive line, strong defensive line too, but mostly, and you know, when the offenses are good, they have a really exceptional offensive line. And, you know, I think that, you know, I'm sure Mel Tucker knew that. I'm sure Mark D'Antonio knew that. And Jonathan Smith needs to fix that.
Yep. That's where the focus is. Yep. I don't want to hear about what wide receivers we're recruiting. I don't want to hear about, you know, what quarterback we're recruiting. I don't want to hear about anything. Tell me we're getting road graders. Tell me we're getting defensive linemen and by the bucket.
Yes. Yep. Yep. That's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah, if that's not done, it doesn't matter who. It doesn't matter how many stars are running the ball or throwing the ball.
Yeah. And if you want to put 70% of your NIL money into the offensive line and defensive line, go for it. Because you're going to win some football games doing that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I will also, we didn't discuss special teams in depth, but we got a punter.
Oh, no, we need to do that.
Yeah, the punter looks pretty good.
Right, actually, yeah, no, he was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, he's so patient with the ball, and there were a couple times where he just, like, feathered it in there, you know, like, you know, you hate to have to be punting that much, but at the same time, it's a field position game.
Yeah, he had six punts, 297 yards over those punts, which is, what, almost 50 yards a punt? Holy cow.
Yeah, I know.
Two, and that includes two downed inside the 20.
Yes.
This is all American stuff. We saw an all American performance out of Ryan Eckler.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how you win close games.
Mm-hmm.
You win close games because you got kickers and punters that know what they're doing.
Right.
Do you think Jonathan Kim took a shower after the game?
Yeah, he didn't sweat much, did he? I wonder. I think he might have just threw the suit on.
I would have. I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah, right. Wasn't a tough day at the office. He had his feet on the desk.
It's not like he needed to jump into the ice bath or anything.
Some nights you have like that, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Yeah, this Eckley's really good. It's so nice to have a weapon like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, all right. So we talked about. Let's get back to the coaching just for a second.
Yes.
Kind of like the new look defense, don't we? That's an aggressive play caller.
I like that. Yep.
Yeah. There's no bend but don't break in this defense. I'm not opposed to bend but don't break defenses because they can be very effective. But this is not a bend but don't break. This is a go hit the guy defense.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm totally okay with that. That blends very well with the Spartans' defensive tradition.
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. And on offense, there were no end arounds to the short side of the field, so I guess that's progress. And.
That seems like it's been happening for a year. Yeah, and the announcer is calling it a triple reverse or whatever they say.
Oh,
it's completely wrong.
Yeah. Just unbelievable. all right. So how hopeful are we about this Michigan State team moving forward?
Well, so that's a good question. I mean, this was Florida Atlantic, and it was a struggle. Yet it didn't feel like, you know, it doesn't feel like the house is on fire or, you know, it's not last season. But, you know, it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult because some of these teams they're playing coming up, like Maryland, and you mentioned Boston College. Boston College is very improved. The head coach is Dan O'Brien, right?
So I think that's the place they improved the most. Bill O'Brien.
Yeah. Bill O'Brien, I'm sorry.
Dan O'Brien was the decathlete, right?
I've called him all day long. I knew we were doing the podcast, and I kept saying in my brain, Bill O'Brien, and then I botched it. I fumbled the ball right there. I said, Dan.
Yeah.
Bill O'Brien, as soon as I heard that he was taking that job at Boston College and I knew they were on our schedule, I'm like, okay, this game is going to be hard now. And Boston College actually last year was a decent team. The coach just took off. You know, I think he got fired, but I think he got fired because he didn't want to stay there. I don't know what was going on. It sounded like it was a personality clash with the AD. But as soon as I saw that raised my eyebrows. And, you know, this little stretch of games after Prairie View, you're going to have Boston College, you're going to have Ohio State, even though it's an East Lansing, and Oregon.
I don't know what to say, but let's go down the Bill O'Brien rabbit hole just for a second.
Sure.
Bill O'Brien, just from a pure X's and O's, football mind, tactician, strategist, he's the best football coach in the Big Ten.
Yes.
It's not even close.
Right, and he's not in the Big Ten, but he's better than the Big Ten coaches.
If he was in the Big Ten, when he was at Penn State, he was the best tactician in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
You're right, he's not in the Big Ten.
But he's better than most of the coaches in the Big Ten, though.
He's better than every single one, just from a tactical standpoint, from a strategy standpoint.
Yes. Yep.
It is not even close.
Right.
Not that he needed all of that brain power to beat Florida State.
I love the Florida State cheap shots coming from you because Keon Coleman is not there anymore, so we can make fun of them now.
We can unload now. What was it? The last three games they got killed in their bowl game. Then they lost in Ireland. Who they lose to? Georgia Tech. And now they lost to Boston College. I mean, this is a school that's suing to get out of the ACC. The ACC should be like, leave. You can't even win a conference game.
Yeah, they're not. They're making it pretty easy. The ACC league office is probably laughing. You know, they're probably like the head guys are sitting there smoking cigars, watching Florida State play, going, ah, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah. It's like, wait a minute. You want more money for what? For this?
Yeah, careful how upset you get. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, you can't even beat the bottom of the ACC. What makes you think you deserve more money?
Right, exactly.
This is stunning. Like, the biggest addition Georgia Tech made is, like, get a new offensive coordinator.
Right.
Florida State, wow. And I mean, they spent all last year just running their mouths, and they spent all of the lead up to this year just running their mouths. And it's just like, all right, well, let's just hope the next team slaps them upside the head. And how great would it be if, like, Florida State just went winless?
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's an interesting thought, yes.
It sounds like Bud would find it funny too.
Bud's a Florida State fan.
He's actually really upset. Keon Coleman isn't there right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, good luck to Keon Coleman in the NFL. I hope he does well. And there's no reason to root for Florida State right now.
No. I'm going to be rooting for Keon in Buffalo. Like, go up and get some Josh Allen catches.
He will. Yep.
Yeah, he will. But you're right. The Michigan State schedule, they got Maryland, they've got Boston College. These are teams, well, not Boston College because they got a new coach. But anyway, these are teams that are going to pose, simply just because they have more talent, are going to be able to stress the Michigan State offense and defense in ways that they weren't stressed by Florida Atlantic. You know, the Michigan State offense can clearly execute better. But even if they execute better, it doesn't feel like they're in a position to say, yes, we're going to score a lot of points this year.
Right. Yeah, that's not going to be happening. And the defense is not going to be able to be hitting home runs every week, especially against these high-powered offenses. When you're playing Ohio State and Oregon, I mean, you know you're going to be giving up north of 24. So can your offense at least, you know, a victory for me, a moral victory, because that's where we're at as a program right now, would be, can we keep it kind of close? Can we keep this game within 7 to 10 points into the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
You know,
that's where it is, because until we get the horses up front, and that's only going to happen through recruiting. It's not going to happen through the transfer portal. So just stop. All right?
Yes.
All right, you can get great receivers, you can get great DBs, you can get really good quarterbacks, you can get a lot of stuff in the transfer portal.
Right.
Right? But you're not going to get the big uglies.
Right. You're right. The transfer portal to me is like free agents in, you know, baseball. you don't want to overdo it with free agents. Colorado is case in point. You know, look at how high and then how low Colorado was with a team full of transfer portal. It just does not, it's not going to work.
No.
No. That's extreme. That's extreme. That's the two ends. You know, the Deion end, which, and I love Deion Sanders, but that just, that doesn't work down to the bottom what Dabo Swinney thinks, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like, look, you can get a lot of good stuff from Myers, right? But you can't get furniture there. So stop trying.
It's going to fall apart.
Yes.
That's like, you know, can I get good pizza at Little Caesars?
Can't do it.
Or that's like Mitch Album because he doesn't write good columns anymore. Did I just do a segue?
Oh, we got to get into this. Well, let us, we will return to college football. But first, our Mitch Album moment.
Dun, dun, dun. All right. So, okay. This isn't even about Michigan State or sports, what I'm about to say. And I don't think we've ever, have we, I was trying to remember in all these years that we've done the podcast, have we really ever gotten to, I think we talked about that whole snafu at the Final Four once about Mitch Album, but we have never really spent a lot of time on this guy on the podcast, have we?
We have a little bit. Every time he mails in a column, which
is every week now.
Every week. Every time he mails in a column from a big event, like it feels like the free press dusted him off and said, Mitch, go do this. And he like had to blow the dust off his keyboard and like stretch his fingers out and say, oh, I kind of remember how to do this. Done.
Oh, right. I don't know if we might have talked about it offline, but it was when the NFL draft was going on in Detroit this past spring, and he did that horrible Chamber of Commerce article, like, you know, welcome to Detroit.
He's the king of those Chamber of Commerce articles.
It was bad.
He does it for
every
big event. It's just like, Mitch, get some stick. Get some new stick. You've been doing this for 50 years.
Yeah, and honestly, yeah, it was cringy. That was bad. But there's a level of, I guess, I'm not saying that reporters and columnists, how do I say this? I'm not saying that they have to be our moral compasses, you know, or to do the right thing. You know, everyone's entitled to opinions, especially columnists, and everyone has angles now. You know, there's always slants, and I get it. And I do not want to be political on this podcast, so I'm not going to be, but I will say that we all know that there's a presidential election coming up in November. And, I always think no matter the election, if you have the right and the capability to vote, you should vote in it.
Yes. Agreed. Except 100%.
Are you saying his rights should be revoked?
I'm set. Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
So I don't know if you know which column I'm referring to, but it was a couple Sundays ago where it was on the heels of the Democratic convention where he wrote this sort of like, I couldn't even understand where he was going with it. To me, it was like a Seinfeld column. It was the column about nothing, where he was just sort of like trying to say that one particular campaign's message of joy should be met with cynicism, which he's not wrong about.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's talking about one other candidate's frequent racism, which he used the words maybe should be met with cynicism, and that was sort of weird. But then what was worse was, he goes on this long sort of way away from politics about what he believes joy really means. And then I was left with the message by the end of the column that if we're so cynical about these two choices of political campaigns, should we not vote? I mean, that's kind of the message that I don't think he was intending to send, but that's what I came away with. And that seems very murky and irresponsible.
Yeah, it's murky, it's irresponsible, it's stupid, it's typical Mitch Albom. So, and I say this not to be joking, I say this in a very truthful sense, is Mitch Albom has become one of these people who's like, you know, there's, you know, we'll say, all right, there's a lot of good stuff here and a lot of bad stuff here and a lot of good stuff here and a lot of bad stuff here. And, you know, it all washes up and you end up somewhere in the middle. Right? That's who he is. It's basically saying, I'm not left, I'm not right, I'm this person who's above it all. And there's a problem with that. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is that it acts like right or wrong is a left or right issue rather than there being an objective truth. And this is a problem that I think is endemic to the entire media, and Mitch Albom has become an avatar for it. The idea that you can report what one person says and report what another person says and say, nope, my job's done, is ridiculous, because there are facts out there, right?
Right.
Right. And it is the job of a reporter to report those facts and not just what one side said and what the other side said. And it is not the job of a reporter or even a columnist to bemoan the fact that, oh, a lot of people like this guy and hate this person. A lot of people hate this person, another person. I don't know. A columnist is supposed to say, this is what's right, this is what's wrong, and here is why. Instead of saying, throw up my hands and say, I'm just, don't drag me into the middle of this fight, and you guys get out of the middle of this fight either, because both sides are pox on both houses. That's not what this is about. It's the height of irresponsibility. And so, look, I am not telling anyone what to vote or not vote or who to vote for or not vote for or anything like that. All I'm saying is that this isn't a he said, she said, or a he said, he said, or they say, right? There are actual facts out there. So go find the facts and then decide, right? It is,
right.
And Mitch Allen is just the worst.
Yeah.
He acts like he's above it all, and he acts like everything else is everyone else's fault. And it's a pox on both houses, but, you know, there's no truth that ever comes out of his mouth, which is a shame, because Mitch Albom is actually a really smart and talented person who's decided to waste all of that for playing the piano every now and then for his reporter buddies.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's, I just wonder, you know, I feel like he's taking up space from people that actually could write good columns.
A columnist is supposed to have a point of view.
Yeah.
A columnist is not supposed to be, well, you know, these people say this and these people say this and it's all cynical and I'm going to be over here, you know, doing my thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, truly astonishing. And but I also think there was something deeper going on there, and he has an axe to grind with one party because of him. Now, you know, I'm going to get into something here a little. He went to Haiti. He has he's mm-hmm. part of a nonprofit group or something that runs an orphanage in Haiti. God bless all that. You know, like, you know, you're trying to help people. Great. Good for him. That's great. But to my understanding of the way I read into it was that he went there when the Haitian government was falling apart and against State Department warnings. And then when he couldn't get out because the airport closed, he decided that it was one party's political party's fault and nothing was being done enough. And so he took the opportunity to grind his axe. And Yeah, I just don't. Yeah.
And I actually don't have a problem with them having an axe to grind. Just be up front and out there.
Right. Right.
Don't say cynicism here, cynicism there, and then axe your grind the axe. It's just, it's like, no. Just say, this
right.
is how I see it.
Right. Yeah, when I was reading it, I'm just like, is cynicism the right word to be using here even? Like, you know.
No.
I wasn't even, I think he had the wrong idea. And that again, just speaks to his, I think, laziness or whatever he thinks, you know, I don't know. It's a shame because he used to write good columns. Somehow the free press still, I guess he still gets clicks for them or something.
Yeah, it must be. No, look, Mitch Albom's an insanely talented writer, His books are fantastic. He's really smart. He used to be really good at his columnist job.
Yes.
But he's not anymore. And he's just not engaged, and he's not engaging. It's a bad combination. And the free press should stop signing his paychecks because it's not good. And you're right. There are other people with whose voices are worth hearing. And they need a platform because Mitch is wasting it.
Yeah, I mean there's some I think budding potential columnists at the Free Press right now that could deserve his spot very easily. That would put more effort and energy into it.
Yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm.
At least they'll know that you don't have to hit Control S to save your document anymore.
Wait, I thought he still used the typewriter.
Man.
I'm off that subject.
All right. No, fair enough. Look, you're 100% right. That column was a waste of time by Mitch Albom. And it was wrong.
Yeah. It was wrong. Yeah.
And it was wrong. It was wrong. It was a waste of time. And, you know, it's cannot be justified. And it's just bad newspapering. It's bad editing. It never should have appeared. It's bad a lot of stuff. See, newspapers can't afford editors anymore either. Like, once upon a time, a good editor would have looked at this and, you know, pardon my French here. It's just like, what the hell is this fucking piece of garbage? We can't run this. And those would have been the exact words that came out of the mouth of the editor. And I know because I was one of those editors.
And I know because I had editors say stuff like that to me.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But I learned something from that. And hey, this is a message for the state news. The poor young woman who was writing hockey columns for you last year. Did you read any of those?
No, I didn't.
Oh, Satchmo. It was, what's the best way to describe it? I don't even think train wreck is nice enough, or mean enough.
Wow.
It was.
We're talking a debacle of catastrophic proportions?
Yeah, and really this would have been a teaching moment for this person and an editing moment. Basically, she was sort of, they allowed her columns to go into the state news, at least the online edition, the Michigan State Hockey Recaps. And they were just free-flowing, free-form, unedited, sort of like her thoughts about the game all the way through what was supposed to be the game story, not a column, game story, and no quotes, and just recapping every single sort of way too much, starting from the beginning of the game before the puck is dropped all the way to the end of the game. And that's not just very amateur-y and a shame. And I feel bad. I felt badly actually reading the articles. Like I was like, as a journalist and student there, I was like, this is sinful and shameful, and I could hear editors yelling at me, you know, about this article, yelling about this article. And I, gosh, I wish they'd do something about that, because there was no reason for, you know, Spartan hockey columns to be that long. If you need Neil Koepke to come in there and do a little in-service, you know, with your hockey writer, please, by all means, do that, because it's, please don't do that again this year, State News.
Or bring us in. We've been editing hockey for ages.
Hey, we have the puck man right here with us on this podcast named Satchmo. He will come in and edit your articles, State News.
For those of you that may have remembered me back in the day, but I was the puck pundit. I wrote a fantasy hockey column for a while.
Yeah.
And edited hockey at the Nation's newspaper, or at the Nation's newspaper's website, at least. it's a shame. Everyone needs an editor, and some people need strong editors, and there's nothing wrong with that. Look, I had reporters that wrote great copy, and they still needed an editor, but I didn't have to do much with it. And I had other reporters that were great reporters, but man, was their copy rough. And so, you know, I had to turn it into something. Doesn't mean that I could do their job and get the information they got, but I could turn it into something that when you read it, it's like, all right, that made sense.
Yeah, exactly. Because the fact is, people still do read stuff, and, you know, and it needs to be a quick read sometimes. You know, my Spartan hockey, you know, game story doesn't have to be War and Peace.
No,
it shouldn't be. Nope.
It's settled for just the war part.
Spoken like Bill Rafferty right there.
Little lingerie music. All right, so I think in terms of just transitioning back to football here for a little bit, I'm curious as to how this team is going to develop. I actually think the defense has a chance to be good if they stop getting injured in the secondary. It's a great linebacking room. I mean, I think they got a lot of depth and talent there. It looks like they got some talent up front. They could do some really good things. The secondary, we'll see. They weren't really challenged, and they still had some coverage busts. We'll see how the defense goes. And I think the offense, I think Aiden Childs got a lot of tools in the kit, man. He can run. He can throw. He reminds me a little bit of Lamar Jackson.
Yes.
He's got, I mean, Lamar Jackson, I mean, this was a guy, if you remember Lamar Jackson in college, like there was a huge difference between Lamar Jackson and Michael Vick in college. Michael Vick was athletic. I mean, both of them athletic as hell. But Michael Vick was a runner and a thrower. I mean, he did both, and he did both extremely well. But there were all these highlights of, you know, him running the ball and doing crazy stuff running the ball. And he got some highlights of him throwing the ball, so it was clear he could do that. Man, Lamar Jackson, man, he threw one of the prettiest balls I've ever seen in college football. I mean, he was running that offense down in Louisville. Man, it was humming. And he was great. I mean, he wasn't just good. Mm-hmm. He was great down there. He was running a pro-style offense. And just slinging that ball. And if he had to run the ball, he did. And he was great at running it. But, you know, he wasn't a guy that wanted to go back and run the ball. I mean, with Michael Vick, there was just a lot more running. Not with Lamar Jackson. He was awesome, and he ran the ball, and he was spectacular when running the ball. But, man, he could throw it, and he was throwing darts. Left, right, middle, deep, short, all that sort of stuff. I feel like Aiden Childs is – I'm not saying Lamar Jackson, but I feel like he's that type of quarterback. He's on that sort of trajectory more than the Michael Vick trajectory.
Yes. No, I agree with you. I think that's a great comparison. And like I said, I think he has a really good arm. And I think if he and the receivers can get a little closer to on the same page, you know, I think some interesting things could start happening. That would be wonderful. Yeah.
I agree. And especially if, you know, Coach Smith reaches the same conclusion that I have, and that pretty much everyone that's watched Michigan State all the last 5 years has, is that this is a better pass blocking team than run blocking team. You know, you're going to see a lot more throwing in critical situations than running. Not that he isn't going to want to balance. Jonathan's always going to want to balance. I'm all for balance ball. But when it just comes to that critical down, critical situations, I think you're going to see the ball more in Aiden Child's hands and less in the hands of the running backs.
Yes. Oh, I agree.
Yeah. And so as that offense evolves, I think it's going to get really interesting. So I think there's some fun stuff to see. I don't know how many wins we're going to get this season, but I think there's some fun stuff to see. And see the growth of this team.
You mentioned, you know, how the schedule looks is kind of interesting because, you know, the two hardest games are obviously Ohio State and Oregon. And, you know, we're not going to expect a lot there. Even the best teams are going to have trouble with those two teams probably this season. But, you know, then you get to, like, a bye week after Oregon. You get Iowa at home, very improved. You know, they finally – this doesn't look like the typical Kirk Ferentz team. You know,
they
have a quarterback
there. Well, they actually scored
points. Cade McNamara throws the ball, and the receivers there catch the ball, and they don't look like – this isn't going to be like 12-9 wins, Iowa. They're gonna put up some points. So this is trickier with Iowa, so not a given. And then you go to Ann Arbor for that game. Don't know what's going to happen yet. But then you go into November, and the schedule gets into sort of an area there where you have, I believe, three home games, Indiana, Purdue, Rutgers, and then you have at Illinois. And I'm not making any predictions here, but if the Spartans find their footing by, you know, after the Oregon game, you know, maybe they can put away some wins in November and perhaps at least, you know, get some extra practice and work in a bowl game.
Yeah, I think that's
mm-hmm.
reasonable.
Yeah.
I think it's reasonable to say that if Michigan State is relatively healthy and they've grown as a team, finding four wins in November would be a good way to close the season.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think it's possible. You get three teams at home that, let's just say facts here, none of those teams are by and large, you know, significantly better than Michigan State. You know, they may have a little bit more talent. Rutgers might have a little bit more talent. But if Michigan State's growing during the season, why not?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
100% yep. agree with that. So I am looking forward to watching this team grow this season. And I'm not going to measure the growth in wins and losses. I'm going to measure the growth in execution and in gaining separation and in completing passes and making the right reads and running the right route trees and making the good tackles and not busting coverages and maintaining, how about sacking the quarterback when you get home on a blitz? Now, this was a bugaboo the last couple seasons. It almost came to Michigan State in this game. Late in the fourth quarter, had a free run at the quarterback, didn't get the quarterback down.
Yeah. Yep. Got to get the quarterback down. Yep. Especially in that situation.
Yeah.
You can get burned by that in the first quarter, and you can maybe overcome it. But, yeah, you get burned by that in a critical moment late in the game. That's not good. Yeah.
Kudos to the defense for getting that safety, though. I mean, that was well done. They got in. They got
that
the quarterback down, two points on the board. It took the Big Ten Network 10 minutes to figure out that it was their first safety since 2020. But, you know, that's what happens when you hire interns.
Ouch. Yeah. And I think going along with what you're saying, too, you know, about wanting to see the team grow, I also say – that as fans, we have to do our part, and our part this year is to try and be patient as much as possible. And I know we're all very reactive, but this is a new coach. This is a new team. Sure, we're going to get a little bit frustrated sometimes, but let's give the benefit of the doubt here. And, you know, 61 new players, brand new coach. Let's give this some time and some chance to work out and not be – the last thing that I really want to see Spartan Nation doing is running everybody out of town because we didn't win the Big Ten championship. Folks, we are not in the Big Ten championship yet.
No. No.
Not close. Let's be real.
Let's give this team credit for learning the fight song. All right, and let's just enjoy that for a little while.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And let's give Jonathan Smith credit for prioritizing that and saying, "Nope, we got to work on that. We're going to get it down." And good for him. And look, I've read a lot and I've heard a lot of talk about Jonathan Smith's team building exercises and attempts to build chemistry, all this sort of stuff. Jonathan Smith knows what makes a winning football team, and he knows that this team needs to get more connected. He knows he needs to build chemistry. He knows he needs to do all of these sorts of things, and he's putting the energy and the resources into doing it. I think he's a good coach.
Yep.
I think he understands what it takes to win, and I also think he understands what it takes to construct rosters at this level, how to use the transfer portal, all this sort of stuff. So I'm actually excited about the future of this and to see where all of this goes. But you're right. Michigan State fans need to show some patience. Let us not run anyone out of town. And for the love of God, can we stop jangling keys when an important down comes up? This whole key play. It's so high schoolish. Just stop it, people. This is what they do in Pop Warner football. No.
Yeah, I was wondering what was going on there.
Oh.
That's a trend that I don't mind if it goes away.
Just stop. Let's put an end to this.
Yes.
Do not get the keys out.
You're going to lose them.
You're going to lose them. I mean, they're going to fall through the bleachers. You're not going to be able to get back in your car. Just keep them in your pocket, people.
Right. You'll have to call your parents. They'll have to come up with a brand new key to the SUV. It's ugly. The whole thing is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep the keys in your pocket, kids.
Jeez.
We love you, kids. We love you, Spartan kids. Don't do that.
Yeah, and the older you are, the more we don't need to see your keys.
Right. Well, I can assure you, Satchmo, you will never catch me pulling my keys out of the game doing that.
You and me both, brother. It's just...
I know. It's a disturbing trend.
It's just... I mean, come on, people.
There's so many other things we can come up with.
Yeah. It was just bad. All right. What else? First of all, let me say this before we get into it. Like, what the heck is week zero? Why do we have a week zero? Do people not understand how numbers work?
Yeah, I have heard that, but I also saw somebody did it the right way. It might have been the Fox Sports app. Calls it week one, and they started it from, well, literally, Florida State's loss in Ireland to Florida State's loss last night. That makes sense to me. Fine. That's just one long week one when everybody plays.
I like that. The long week
that's
one
fine.
Works for me.
Yeah, that's
good. The other thing before we get into the scores is the two-minute timeout. Come on. This is a two-minute warning, people. Let us not – look, I understand that the NCAA wants you to call it the two-minute timeout, all right? I understand that. I understand that it's in their style guide. I understand they're doing this to differentiate themselves from the NFL. Just stop it.
The NFL is not going to get mad if you call it two-minute warning.
Everyone knows it's a two-minute warning. Yes.
Yes.
This is the two-minute warning. Everyone knows it's a two-minute warning. Stop calling it a two-minute timeout.
Anything surprise you, you know, beyond Michigan State football? Did anything surprise you or stand out or made you curious about week zero or week one?
Week one, yeah. So,
yes.
So we talked about it a little bit.
Yeah.
In that, you know, the Florida State losing two games brought me much joy. but there were some other things, like Georgia just routing Clemson.
Yeah.
Man, Dabo Sweeney, you got issues down there, man.
Yeah, well, he's going to get run out of there.
He's going to – I mean, well, look, we're making fun of Florida State. Clemson's plaintiff number two. If you're going to sue, you better put your money where your mouth is. And even if you don't win, at least show up. And, look, Clemson was in this for a half, right? It was 6-0 at the half. But after that, it was game over.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. Oregon struggled against Idaho. They were having big problems with the Vandals.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
124-14. Kalen DeBoer.
I know. I thought Nick Saban was still coaching the team. Yeah, Nick Who is right. I don't think anyone expected that. Yeah,
yeah.
Alabama looked like they just picked up where Nick left off.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then Texas A&M. Shouldn't we just take football away from them? It's just
Mike Elko inherited a mess, but he chose to go there, right? I mean, you know, Duke was a lot better off to me. I don't know. I might have hung out at Duke a little bit longer for another job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It's just one of those weird things. Penn State looks really good. I mean,
Penn State looks terrific. Yeah, yes. I mean, hey, Penn State, you know, everybody's knocking them down because of their record against Ohio State. You know, maybe this is their year to finally do something. They get them in, they get them at home in November.
It looks like they finally have an offense.
Yeah.
Which, if that's the case, you know, they've got a shot at the whole thing here. You know, the final score looks good in Michigan, Fresno State. Let me tell you what, the Bulldogs were in this game. And if they were able to finish some drives, they might have won this game. This was not – I mean, it was 17 points in the fourth quarter that broke this game open. This was a lot closer than people thought.
So who gets fired faster, Dabo Sweeney or Brian Kelly?
Oh, I think Brian Kelly's there for a while. but the whole fist-pounding thing just cracked me up. Pounding the fist into the table, saying, I'm so angry. It's like Brian Kelly's incapable of being a sincere, original person, right? So it's just not within his character. I mean, he's a smart, good football coach. But he's just not a sincere one, and that's okay. You don't have to be sincere, but man, doing this performative thing, you know, smashing the table and saying I'm so angry, and trying to get the attention of your team—I mean, come on.
Yeah.
How about USC though? They got a defense.
Yeah, USC's defense came to play, and that receiver for USC—I forgot the kid's name—that catch he made between the two LSU defenders
Hudson. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
fantastic.
That was fantastic. I don't know whether the USC defense came to play, but at least they came to tackle, which is like a vast improvement over the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, Lincoln Riley finally has a defense there. That's for sure.
Yeah. At least a defense that isn't going to get run over. And if you marry that with an offense that keeps scoring points, you could be cooking with gas there. So, I think it's interesting. I think USC and Washington and Oregon are going to be a lot tougher in the Big Ten than people realize. Not going to be a lot tougher than people realize, though, is UCLA. they were in Aloha Land. And I think they won, but they struggled.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, UCLA football is sort of not they're not the threatening UCLA of long ago.
No.
Yeah, and one thing we didn't talk about yet, I think we need to make a little time for this, if you have time.
Oh, yeah.
We have not talked about the infomercial on Netflix known as Connor Stallions.
Oh. Wait a minute. We didn't talk about this last week? We talked about this last week.
No, we didn't. I don't believe we've been on.
Wow.
I think that yours truly was unable. I'm just making sure. I think we may have talked offline, but yours truly was unable to partake in a podcast last week. So I think that put us to here.
That's right.
Yes. Yep.
That's right. Holy cow! What a terrible. that wasn't a documentary.
Yeah. It was
an infomercial.
Yeah, it was an infomercial. Yeah. Yeah, it was all lawyered up and scummy. And, yeah, it was typical Michigan. I don't even know why he's being loyal. I don't even understand. You know, and this guy, he's some kind of, like, deranged narcissist or something. Like, you know, I don't know.
All right, so let's start at the beginning here.
Yeah.
All right, so... This documentary should not be labeled a documentary, because
no.
A documentary presents facts and evidence.
Yep.
This presented Connor Stallion, the teenage years edition. This is like the Wonder Years version of Connor Stallion. and dude. The only thing this guy ever wanted to be was a football coach at the University of Michigan.
Yes.
And that's the only thing in this telling of the story. He memorized that Bo Schembechler speech about being a Michigan man and playing for the team and all that sort of stuff and being the thing. He looked at, like, the way college football worked and saw they all had military experience, and that's why he went to the Air Force Academy or the Naval Academy. Come on, folks.
Right.
And he didn't go because he embodied service and wanted to be service. I'm sure he liked service and all that. No, he went because he wanted to be the football coach at the University of Michigan.
Yes.
And he thought this was the fastest way to do it. And,
right.
And his telling of the story, the reason the University of Michigan became good is he showed up and he started stealing their signs. Legally.
Right.
Legally.
Right. Right.
And nope, that wasn't him on the Central Michigan sideline. Never mind the fact that you got Portnoy just laughing his ass off. Like, I know that was him. He told me that was him.
Right. He's a Michigan guy too. That's pretty telling. I know. Yeah. That's like, dude, you might as well just own up to that fact. I mean, what I'd like to know, and I think this would probably solve that riddle, and it wouldn't take much, probably, is so he had a beard, and on the sideline for Central Michigan, it was down to a goatee, so he shaved his face, and, you know, as special ops people do, you know,
you
want to make sure you don't look the same, and you got to blend in, and what did he look like the next night for Michigan's opening game? Just pull up that, if he had the goatee going, and then that's him. Like, you know, it seems pretty easy.
Yeah, and so it seems pretty easy on that. But then you've got, like, he's like, I used to buy tickets all the time to go for different games. Why? You had zero intention to going to these games. None whatsoever.
Did you really want to see Illinois play Indiana?
Yes. Why? I mean, you are a coach on the sideline. Why are you buying tickets?
And
why
are
these specific games? Like,
right.
If you were, look. Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
The whole, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the laughable part was, you know, he was asked why the people in his seats were taking video, and he said, oh, they were just excited to be there, like Christmas Day or something stupid like that.
But he's trying to say, like, well, I used to do this, like, to make some extra money. It's like, no, you didn't, because if you're trying to make extra money, you would have bought tickets to Clemson, Florida, and resold those on the secondary market. Right?
Such a clown show.
All right, you would have bought tickets to Bedlam and then resold those on the secondary market.
Right, yeah, you want to make some money.
You want to make some money. You're not making money by the whole thing is
Wisconsin against Northwestern. Yeah. Right. Well, he was also messing around with the SEC. He was going to SEC games, right? Like, he was buying tickets to the – they were scouting Georgia up the wazoo. Well, you start messing around with Georgia and Alabama, somebody's going to find you. They're going to be like, who is this guy? Why is this guy from Michigan buying seats here? Like, everybody knew it. It seemed like the dirtiest open secret ever.
Well, and so here's the other. And so I've been reading a lot of reporting on this, and there'd be talk about Connor Stallion on the sidelines. Like, they're like, look, the only reason you've got a guy like Connor Stallion on the sideline who's actually talking to the coaches during the game is because he's got inside information.
Right.
Right. These analysts, these types, these assistant coaches, I mean, like, head coaches and offensive coordinators really restrict who they're getting, who's talking to them during the game. So a random coach isn't going to go up and tell them shit, right? The only reason that, you know, a coach can tell them shit is as important. And so clearly Connor Stallion's had important information to relay. And it's not because he just got so good at deciphering the signals that he knew what play was being called.
Well, he says that's what it is.
Yeah, he says that, but no, that's not the way
right.
it works.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, to me, it's just nonsensical. And
right.
the fact of the matter is, the documentary didn't talk to anyone who put up an opposing point of view outside of that Detroit news reporter. I'll give that Detroit news reporter credit. It's just like, yeah, he broke the rules. He deserves whatever he gets. So does Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What
stuff about Harbaugh saying, I don't know who the guy is or whatever. I mean, there's so many photographs of Harbaugh standing near him. You mean to tell me you don't know who's on your staff? You don't know who the guy is?
And if you don't know who he is, why'd you give him a game ball?
Yeah. Right, exactly.
No, see, this wasn't a documentary. This is a biopic. This is the Connor Stallion biopic.
Yeah. And we didn't really need it.
No.
No.
No. Didn't need
no.
it. I mean, calling this a documentary... It's like calling Sean Hannity a straight news guy.
Exactly right. And what's with his lawyer? His lawyer from Austin, Texas, is saying that he knows Ohio State's behind this.
Oh, yes. See, this is the thing that cracks me up. What he was doing is wrong, but it doesn't matter because it's Ohio State that's providing the evidence. He still did it.
Right. This is a warped, very, like, the whole thing. Jim Harbaugh is the ringmaster. The circus left town.
Ah.
When Connor Stallions is one of the clowns. And, you know... Enjoy your asterisk championship, Michigan, on steroids. Like, that doesn't count. It was 3 years, and by the way, Michigan State beat you once. Where was your good special ops to stop KW3 that day?
Yeah, no. KW3 can't be beat by special ops. Cannot be beat by special ops.
you're right about this Ohio State thing. This Ohio State thing cracks me up. Is just like, all right, let's just say Ohio State did all the things that this documentary suggested they do.
Mm-hmm.
Suggested they did. Let's just say for the sake of argument they did. All right. First of all right, that's pretty lame. But beyond the fact that's pretty lame, that means you still did it.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's like I stole stuff from 7-Eleven. But if that guy operating that camera up there hadn't been filming it, I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
Right. And Michigan State's name got dragged into the mud on that whole part.
Oh,
too. Like, I think
that
the news
just
reported
chapped my ass about the bad blood and the little brother and you know, not wanting to play for safety. Did you call the Michigan State Athletic Department? Did you ask them? Did you say, hey, was this true? Because that's what a documentarian would do.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that thing had more holes than Swiss cheese. That
yes.
Just awful. An awful use of 90 minutes watching that.
Terrible.
I expected better from Netflix out of that. I expected some actual real, like HBO does, you know, with real sports. I expected some kind of real, you know, two-sided, you know, Connor Stallions can say what he wants, but let's have some other people talking in this thing about, well, no, not really. And, you know, the fact that Dave Portnoy ends up being, you know, the most compelling sort of counter thing there to this whole thing is rather amusing to me.
Yes. Just think about it. Yeah. Dave Portnoy was the voice of reason in this in this stuff.
Right. Right. In the Connor Stallion clown show. And what is this high school he's at in Detroit? Northwestern? What is this?
No, I think it's a Mumford, right?
Mumford? Yeah, something. But why would you hire this guy even as a volunteer? Like, what message is this sending?
A terrible one. A terrible message, and B, what did his resume suggest that he could coach defenses anyway?
Right. I don't see any football capability from the guy.
Unless you're just saying, hey, he's just going to figure out the play calls and tell his team what to do.
That's probably actually all it is.
Yeah. What's really funny, though.
We should follow that team this year and just, like, do updates on the podcast.
Yeah.
Just to
see. Oh, I think we should.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do it.
On Mumford's record.
Yes.
What came out after the Mumford hiring, though, was interesting. I don't know if you saw this, but apparently Berkeley High School in Michigan tried to hire him first, and it caused so much controversy that they had to pull back, and that's how Detroit Mumford got him.
Wow.
What I want to know is, what is it about Connor Stallion that people look at him and say, yeah, I want him to coach for me?
I don't know. I do not know.
It's stunning. It's stunning. Yeah. Maybe he used that military experience to get blackmail information on people.
What harm? I mean, okay, so why couldn't he have just told the truth?
Because the truth doesn't jibe with his coaching aspirations, right? So he's under NCAA investigation over this, and he clearly wants to become a football coach. And so he's coaching at high school now. I think he wants to coach in college again. And I think if he admits to doing this, there's a good chance that he never reaches that stuff. So his entire defense is, this rule is stupid. And I didn't break this stupid rule, but even if I broke this stupid rule, the rule is stupid, and it's Ohio State's fault.
Ohio State's fault, and 80 or 90 other 80 or 90 other schools have intelligence op guys, and I talk to them all the time. Oh, that's interesting.
So, yeah, and so if you're going to bust me, you need to bust them too.
Yeah, it's funny that I've never heard of any of them. Never heard anything mentioned about them.
Yeah. Or maybe they were just smart enough not to talk to their coaches on the sideline in front of the TV cameras.
Yeah.
So
right, they shouldn't be on the sideline, probably.
Yeah. So realistically, you're just getting busted for being an idiot.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I'll tell you what. I'll fast forward the calendar right now. 10 years, maybe 12, 2036. Satchel and I are doing a podcast. The breaking news thing, sound effect goes off. And Satchel reads the following headline, Connor Stallions, out of nowhere, hired as defensive backs coach by the University of Michigan. I guarantee you. This just in the year 2036, Connor Stallions, the disgraced, cheating Navy ops guy for Michigan's tainted 2023 championship, has been hired as the defensive backs coach at the University of Michigan. Back to you, Satchel.
And I will say the most Michigan thing ever to do.
Because they always bring their cheating kind back.
Yep.
As if it didn't happen. You know? Most people get rid of their cheaters. They don't want to be associated. But Michigan somehow...
They keep bringing them back. As long as they're associated with the glory years.
It's really funny when you read about like annoying fan bases, you know, from some of the college blogs and things. The one constant thing that always comes up when Michigan's fans always rate very highly on most annoying fan bases is their disturbing love of the lore of Bo Schembechler. They all say that. That's a common thread when you said that thing about they always what were your words again? They always bring back their what did you say again? It was
the Michigan man speech. It's just
The Michigan man speech. Yeah. They always bring back their own or whatever. Yeah, it's remarkable. And how bitter they still are, some of these old Michigan alumni, how bitter they still are about that 1974 vote that Michigan State broke the tie and voted Ohio State into the Rose Bowl. Yeah, and I was hearing about that 25 years after that happened. I was alive, but I didn't know. I'm pretty sure I didn't know anything.
I mean, Michigan fan, if you want to go back in history, let's go back in history where you voted to keep Michigan State out of the Big Ten. Or even better, you voted to keep Notre Dame out of the Big Ten.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Cowardice.
Yes.
It's cowardice.
Yep.
The biggest cowards in the Big Ten. Michigan.
They reside in Ann Arbor.
Yeah. That kind of
and
sucks.
As you said, and as you said, Satchel, last year when all this was being unveiled before our eyes, that the rest of the world is finally finding out how arrogant and completely out of the world and ridiculous Michigan and their fans are.
Oh, yes. Well, I love the fact how Michigan complained the entire world was cheating. And then when Michigan got caught cheating, it's like, but Ohio State.
Right. Well, see, Michigan fans were warned about Harbaugh. Yeah, Harbaugh's the favorite son, blah, blah, blah. But I was thinking about this, you know, when I was watching the Connor Stallions thing, and that was Jim Harbaugh, from the time he set foot back on their campus as the coach, was trying to bend those rules. You know, remember he was going to do all those camps in Florida and all that stuff? He was walking the tightrope the whole time. And you know, when he got to like 2019 or 2020, he was desperate. And so he sees the Stallions guy, and I'm not saying he went and hired him. I don't know what was going on. But when he was presented with this guy, he was like, okay, yeah. He was at the point where cheating to win was his only survival tactic to get himself out of there to get that NFL job that he coveted. So I'm going to get out of here with my national championship, and or he would have left, you know, after this year, probably, maybe, I don't know, if they lost in the title. It doesn't matter. But, you know, like I said, he's the circus ringmaster, and it was all just, you know, like a big show. And, you know, you leave town, and now he's smoking stogies on the beach, and he doesn't care.
Living in an RV. He was living in an RV. He's moved into an apartment now.
He's just living in a suite in SoFi Stadium. That's all he's doing.
Yeah, living in a suite in SoFi Stadium.
in his khaki pants.
Oh, my goodness. His khaki pants. They're probably cheaper to buy out in California. They're easier to find in California, right?
Right. Also, did Sports Illustrated curse the Lions?
All right, we got to talk about the Lions. I didn't know Sports Illustrated picked the Lions to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
I had no idea, because that's how irrelevant Sports Illustrated is.
I know. Sports Illustrated is way down the tubes.
Yeah. So Sports Illustrated is simply not capable of generating the mystical forces needed to curse anyone.
Right.
That said, how cool is it that the Detroit Lions can be called Super Bowl contenders without anyone actually laughing at the concept?
Right. I know.
That's something that wouldn't have happened a few years ago. And so to me, that's the remarkable turnaround. Not that the Lions are playing well, not that they have good players, a good team, but that they are legitimate Super Bowl contenders, what, 4 years, 3 years after the hiring of Dan Campbell?
Mm-hmm.
And Brad Holmes.
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
It is. Yep. Yep.
It is a turnaround that if it had happened in other NFL cities, would have been trumpeted as an amazing accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, the Lions are talked about as Super Bowl contenders, but generally ignored, you know, outside of saying, yes, they're Super Bowl contenders.
Mm-hmm.
So the turnaround isn't trumpeted.
Mm-hmm.
They are outside of the city of Detroit, rarely discussed.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of saying, yeah, they're legitimate Super Bowl contenders. It is a very weird thing. I have not heard of a legitimate Super Bowl contender the caliber of Detroit. I have not seen that sort of team receive less attention than I have this Lions team.
Yes. I agree.
It's stunning, right? I mean, it mm-hmm. is. I mean, Super Bowl contenders, you know, when they sign free agents, it's like, oh, wow, they signed the free agents. Is what's going to put them over the top? If they get an injury, oh, is this injury going to derail the Super Bowl hopes? None of that. You know, people can barely – people are lucky if they can name a Detroit Lion player. This is a very weird situation that we're in.
Yes. Yep. Yep. There's no, like, there's not that one player. You know, people have heard of maybe Jared Goff, and they're getting to know some of the other people. Amon-Ra St. Brown, you know. But, it's not like there's not a Troy Aikman or an Emmett Smith or a, you know, Jerry Rice or somebody that sort of stands out to everybody.
I think it's more than that. I think people don't want to talk about it. I think that's a large part of it, right? I think people want to acknowledge it and say, yeah, they're Super Bowl contenders. And maybe in like football-centric discussions, like hardcore football circles, in hardcore football circles, people are willing to discuss the Lions and why they're Super Bowl contenders. But once you get outside of that hardcore circle, they're like, yeah, let's talk about Dak Prescott and his contract situation. Let's talk about Patrick Mahomes and see if he's going to three-peat. Let's talk about, Aaron Rodgers and whether he's going to come back from his Achilles injury.
Right. The Lions just aren't a sexy topic.
They're not a topic. That's the problem.
They're not a topic at all, yes. Now, they tried to be. If you recall a month ago, Satchmo, the Lions and your New York Giants were having fisticuffs going on in the joint training camps.
That's because the Giants suck. And look, I'm a Giants fan. I recognize they suck. And every player on that team knows that they got their asses handed to them by the Lions in training camp last year, and they were out to prove that, you know, that can't happen again this year.
Right.
So that's what that was about. But it's just weird. I mean, everyone's like, like I said, there's more talk about Green Bay and Jordan Love and the Packers possibly winning this division. And there's all this talk about the Chicago Bears and how you got Caleb Williams and you got this great defense and can they turn the corner? And then you've got people talking about Minnesota. It's like, oh man, can you believe JJ McCarthy got hurt and who's going to throw the ball to Justin Jefferson? And you got the Detroit Lions. They're like, well, they could win the Super Bowl. Next topic.
Right, that's exactly right. They just want to put the Lions back in the box. They don't really want to think about it.
No, they don't know how to talk about the Lions.
Right, outside of Detroit. You're right.
It's almost like people would just rather the Lions be bad so they could talk about the things they normally talk about Detroit.
Right, exactly. Yep, it's a weird thing. And look, I'm a realist. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen this season. We don't know. The Lions do have a good team, but lots of things can happen. And even if they got into that game in the Super Bowl, it's not all of a sudden like magically that the Kansas City Chiefs, who are the likely team, not guaranteed, but possibly, if they got there, that would be their opponent. They're not going away.
No.
So, well, what is this talk about? I mean, now.
You got me. It is ridiculous. The three biggest question marks in my mind facing the Detroit Lions are the secondary, the defensive line, and then Jameson Williams.
Yes.
Probably in that order.
Mm-hmm.
And if Jameson Williams shows up and has an outstanding year, that just changes the nature of that Detroit offense.
Right.
It makes it more explosive. You got to cover the width and the depth of the field. You can't pay as much attention to Amon Ross St. Brown. You can't pay as much attention to Sam Laporta. You can't pay much attention to Jahmyr Gibbs. Opens running lanes, opens the deep, it just changes everything.
Yeah.
And makes Jared Goff even better because when, Jameson Williams can really stretch the field, create more open windows to throw into. So you got that. And then, all right, is the secondary good enough to hold up? Because I was watching that receiver documentary, which followed Amon-Ra St. Brown a lot. I'm now a huge Amon-Ra St. Brown fan.
Mm-hmm. Just
huge. And, yeah, that fourth down call came up and, you know, whatever. But I'll tell you what happened is the Detroit secondary stopped covering people. And you can blame the fourth down decisions if you want, but no, what really happened is the Detroit secondary stopped covering people. And so,
right, exactly.
Did Detroit do enough to fix it? I think they did. But who knows? You know, we're going to see Terry Arnold and Ennis Rackestra and see whether the rookies hold up. And we're going to see whether the new defensive backs they signed as free agents hold up. And if they do, that changes the equation. And if they can hold up, then that gives the defensive line more time to get after the quarterback. Or maybe a blitz actually gets home because the secondary can cover long enough for the blitzer to get there.
Right. Yep.
But
to me, as a Lions fan, and you know this from being from Detroit too, is that the Lions are in these conversations.
Yes.
They haven't been in these conversations for ever. I mean, even when Barry Sanders played there, it was Barry Sanders was talked about, but it wasn't always that the Lions were focused on as, you know,
I agree. It was always about Barry Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about the greatness of the Lions. It was about the greatness of Barry Sanders. And the storyline was, can Barry Sanders lift the Lions out of their funk, out of their mediocrity, and carry them on his back to something?
Yeah.
It wasn't, wow, the Lions are great, or the Lions are Super Bowl contenders. This is the Lions are Super Bowl contenders.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
It is. Yeah. I was, I guess during the summer when it was slow, another free press thing, I didn't understand this. Thankfully not written by one Mitch Album, but one of the other columnists or someone was dredging up this whole why Barry left us high and dry 24 years ago stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just like, do we have to go back to this? Do we have to start talking about this again? Like, Barry Sanders had every right to do what he did. And, yeah, as a fan, it was disappointing. But, you know, you can't make Barry Sanders play football. He didn't want to play anymore.
That is the truth.
Yeah.
That is 100% truth. Yeah, I was thinking about that. And not the Barry Sanders of it all, but just the Lions sort of being in this place and how cool it is for Lions fans to do this. Like I said, I'm a Giants fan. I've experienced winning the Super Bowl. If the Lions win the Super Bowl, there will be an individual and collective joy that far exceeds the joy of Michigan winning something, Michigan State winning something, the Red Wings winning the Cup, the Pistons winning the NBA championship, the Tigers winning the World Series. None of that's going to come close to what people will feel if the Lions win the Super Bowl. It just won't.
Yes.
This is on a completely different level. I mean, just look at last year, the way Lions fans took over opposing stadiums. The closest we've seen to that is the Red Wings in their heyday.
Right.
But that was almost easier to do. What the Lions fans did is next to impossible. And yet they still did it. But the joy, I mean, it's not even close. The Lions are so beloved. It would be amazing. You know, Little Caesars and Domino's would run out of pizza. It's just... I would love to see it. And I don't think people outside of Detroit get or understand this.
No, they can't.
No.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. No, the only maybe the only team that the only city with a football team with an NFL team that might kind of get that because they're in sort of a similar spot. I mean, in terms of their history, they're just, you know, deprived history of ever being in the Super Bowl would be Cleveland. And I'm not saying Cleveland's a Super Bowl contender. They might be pretty good this year. I don't know. It might be improved. You know, it's apples and oranges a little bit what I'm saying here, but the Cleveland people might understand, it, but that would be it. They'd be the only ones.
Yeah. I buy that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I totally buy that. So yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah.
About the line.
I know. Yeah. It is going to be fun to watch and they're going to have some, you know, fantastic matchups in prime time a few times and, and their division games will be interesting.
Their division games will be interesting. So it's interesting. The Lions could have a worse record and a better team this year.
Yes, that's right. I was thinking that.
Yeah, because they play a first-place schedule, which is how long has it been since they've done that? they play a first-place schedule, and the NFC North might be the best division in football.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so when you combine those two, it's entirely possible. And that's why I think the more interesting thing about watching Detroit play isn't just the wins and losses, which, the wins will come. But how has Detroit improved? Are they playing championship football? And how do you develop that? And how do you turn... You know, how do you grow into that? And to me, that's the more interesting thing. I think the Lions are in a very interesting place. They're at the point where you can say, all right, the championship window's open now. And how do you fit it in? And they've got Jared Goff, the quarterback, you know, tied in at a decent contract number. And so they can build and they can move pieces around and get people. What are the decisions they're going to make? And they're dealing from a position of strength. It's very interesting. I do have a sort of interesting sports talk radio question for you is that which major state of Michigan sports team wins the national championship? We're going to throw the Pistons out because they're not going. They're not going to win anything, ever.
Yeah, it's going to be a long time before the Pistons are anywhere near the NBA Finals.
Yeah. So your choices are Lions football, University of Michigan basketball, hockey, and football, Michigan State basketball, hockey, and football, and the Detroit Red Wings. And the Detroit Tigers, the Tigers up there as well.
Well,
which one of these is most likely to win a championship soonest?
I would have to say probably without a doubt, the Lions. The Lions, to me, seem the closest out of all those to – doing it. My second choice is Michigan State hockey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. How about you?
I would lean. I just think winning a Super Bowl was so hard.
Yeah.
That until Detroit does it, it's hard to believe they're going to be the next team to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think that winning the national championship in basketball and hockey are, I mean, also difficult, but they're a little fluky. And so I like the Michigan State hockey and I like the Michigan State basketball. And so I put those, and Michigan just won their, you know, annual 50-year national championship in football, so that's not going to happen again for a while. And so
probably lean Michigan State hockey or Michigan State basketball. And so one of those two to win a national championship. And then, like, the Red Wings, you know, they might win a national championship. Or they might win a Stanley Cup, I mean, but who knows? I mean, what, we're on year eight of the Iser plan, year seven. You know, we probably got another 7 years to go.
Yeah, it's unclear on the Red Wings, and I like what the Tigers are doing, but it's probably going to take some more time.
A lot more time. I mean,
yeah,
they're interesting. I mean, at least they're not boring. I mean, they're interesting, and I guess people can watch them on TV again. And so that's good because you missed the boring phase and you got sort of got the interesting phase. But yeah, they're not competing for a while. I mean, Detroit feels like one of these teams that's just developing talent for other teams.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, which is a rough place to be. So.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Yeah, and of course, the Pistons, we just leave them out of the conversation. And it's not to slate any other college teams in the state of Michigan, but I don't know. At first glance, is there anybody beyond who you mentioned in the state that's capable?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the hockey teams at Western Michigan and Northern Michigan. That would be Michigan Tech or something like that.
Yeah. There's enough hockey teams in the state of Michigan that makes that more possible. I know Ferris State football got close to a championship a couple years ago, I think.
Maybe Wayne State got close once.
But I
don't see it. I mean, it's tough to envision it.
Yeah, the team with sort of the Michigan fans can say whatever they want, but I think the team with the coolest moment last year was Oakland University beating Kentucky.
Yes.
And that, I just thought that was fantastic. And those Louisville fans will never let Kentucky forget that.
God bless the Louisville fans. I mean, that said, it's like, no one should let Louisville fans get away with it. It was the home of Rick Pitino.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about cheaters. It's just... my goodness.
Do you have any thoughts about MSU men's basketball, the trip to Spain?
The trip to Spain. So I've got lots of thoughts, actually.
Yeah.
One is... It absolutely sucks that they put the live streams on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know it's good for the school and the players and the team to connect with its fans and give them a way to watch these basketball games. You want to know what else is better? Developing out of sight and in private.
Right.
And not having millions of people or thousands of people comment on it over shit that we don't know what really happened. They were playing in empty gyms. They're trying different rotations. They're trying to figure out who's good and who isn't. And people are making conclusions off of that, all this sort of stuff. Man, if these games were in private, Izzo would have tried even wackier lineup combinations because he could have, because no one would have freaked out.
Right, right.
And that's exactly what these things are for. But
yeah.
Outside of that, I hope they had a good time. Spain's a lovely country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just hope they had a good time. You got any thoughts on this?
Right. No, I agree. I mean, yeah, there's nothing that can be assessed from a summer trip overseas, you know. Fall camp is about to start pretty soon, you know, and then you get into sort of the exhibition part, and then the non-conference, you know. I'm looking forward to basketball season, you know.
I am too.
Yeah, men's and women's. The women's team would be very interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, look,
yep.
I'm all about Jeremy Fears playing and seeing how he and Devin Booker and who's going to play the five and the four. And I'm sure there are things to be gleaned from it. I just wish they hadn't put up the Instagram feeds, because I think it's important to have this private time to just fuck around, for lack of a better word.
Right, exactly.
And it's hard to do that when people care about the results and want to see, you know, like whether this the center from the transfer portal is any good. It's just like, well, he might be good. He might not be good. He might need 6 months. He might need 3 months. How about we just sort of give him time to bake?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we live in a time of instant reaction and the need for gratification.
Man, this instant gratification stuff, man.
Mm-hmm.
It just messes everything up.
Yeah.
And it extends beyond, like, sports and, you know, kind of people constantly looking in their phone and stuff. Now, you know, they want everything just right away. And if it doesn't happen right away, it's a disaster. It's a crisis level 10.
Right.
You and I are going to have to do a podcast one day about how Gen X is right about everything.
and ignored by everything. Every time I get so incensed when I see these, you know, besides the YouTube parody about, you know, who knows the most? It was a parody, and they deliberately left Gen X out of it because it was a parody. But you know, they, like the Washington Post recently just did this story about I don't know if it's healthy diets or I can't remember, but you know, they teased it as find out, you know, between baby boomers, millennials, and Gen Z, who's eating the best or whatever. And I'm like, hello,
yeah.
Over
hello.
Here, you forgot one.
Forgot
yeah.
one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It happens all the time.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, our Gen X generation, we're all just lumped in with millennial or baby boomer. You know, the younger half of us are just, oh, they're millennials. The older half of us, oh, okay, boomer. You know, no. We're not either of those things.
Or no. We're competent, which distinguishes them from all of them already.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, we are competent.
Right.
If you take a look at any competent action that's been undertaken by someone from Gen X, not Gen Z, not millennials, and not boomers.
No.
Gen X, put some respect on the name.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness! You're right. We are ignored for no reason whatsoever, outside of the fact that people just don't get it.
No. I'll change the subject really fast, and we can save this for another podcast. But I did glance at the Michigan State Hockey 2024-25 schedule, and happy to note early in the season. At Munn Arena, the Spartans will be hosting Boston College on the Big Ten Network, not on the app, on the actual thing.
Holy cow.
Right. They heard our podcast, I think.
Yes. Well, we know that people in the Big Ten office listen to our podcast, because when we complain about stuff, they go out and fix it. And
And so we know they're listening because the stuff that we complain about is not the stuff that everyone else complains about. And so,
no. Well, we'll see if the announcing improves on the Big Ten Network after this podcast.
Oh, God, I hope so. Jeez.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you're right. We could watch it with the mute button on. But I just feel like you lose, like, the gnat sound and sort of the ambiance, all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking the other day, we should by now be able to have the technology that, you know what, I want to tune into the broadcast. I just want to hear the gnat sound. Can I mute the announcers out?
Oh, that would be so good.
Announcer optional telecast.
Yes. That's what. Oh, YouTube TV, you got to do this.
Yeah. Somebody come up with this, please.
Somebody come up with it.
Yeah.
Or this is even better.
Mm.
Or you can have announcer optional. The second thing you can do is do AI Keith Jackson.
That would be amazingly awesome because they did AI Al Michaels during the Olympics for some of the highlights.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it, Satchmo.
Oh, now, how cool would that be to have AI Keith Jackson as an option?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's unlimited possibilities with stuff like that. AI Vin Scully back to some of the baseball. AI Howard Cosell in the Monday Night Football.
Oh, that would be great.
I know. The announcers wouldn't like it, but I don't care.
Reporting from the source.
I once thought this Detroit franchise and city was one of the worst I had ever seen. But they have turned things around since 1983 when they flew that banner above the goalpost that says that I suck.
That is a good Howard Cosell. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well
showing
done.
Showing my age a little bit. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's all right. See, this is what Gen X does. They do good impressions.
That's right. Damn straight.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah, you're right onto that. That's well, AI, your announcer. You know, the announcers aren't going to like that. I don't care. You know what? Put some good announcers on there or let me do that or just let me hear the gnat sound. I'd totally just love to watch the Spartans broadcast from Spartan Stadium with just the gnat sound, and I just want to hear the band, and that's all. That'd be fine.
Yeah, actually, that would be cool, is to just pipe in the Spartan announcer. Like, you get the stadium experience.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yep. I'm surprised that these networks haven't done that. I mean, they're always looking for ways to cut corners. So, like, you know, and I don't know if you remember this. Back in the mid-'80s, NBC Sports, it was a big deal at the time. Aired a Saturday AFC matchup once. I think it was the Bills and the Jets in the Meadowlands. And it was the first ever announcerless game. It was just that sound of Giant Stadium. Do you remember this?
I do. And I remember how much people hated it.
Yes. But I loved it.
Yeah, same here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Same here.
I mean, I'm sure there were snobs like Bob Costas that said that this was, you know, the travesty to the
broadcast. Oh, no, I think Bob Costas was one of the people that liked it. I think the people that hated
it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think the people that hated it were the fans who always said they wanted an announcerless broadcast, but then tried watching the game and realized they had no fucking clue what was going on.
Yeah, right. Right.
Yeah, I've been swearing a lot tonight. What are you going to do?
Hey, we can be in foul mood sometime. That's fine.
Yeah,
potty mouth move. But seriously, though, that this is what happened, right? Everyone complains about the announcers, but then they realize that without the announcers, they don't know what's going on. See, like you and I, when we watch a game without the announcers, we know what's going on.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean,
we don't need the referee in the box to tell us it's targeting. We can look at it and say, yeah, that's targeted.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, there's some sports where, you know, they might go on for a long time where you're going to turn your back a lot and, you know, baseball game, golf, you know, whatever it is. Like, then you may need to have an announcer there, you know.
Well, I was going to say baseball is the easiest game to have no announcers.
Yeah, right, right.
I mean,
that's true. Yeah.
I mean, look, I like Tim Kirchner. Do we really need to hear him?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just took a stab at baseball. Actually, the games are getting shorter. It's, you know, it's the pitch clock thing is a wonderful addition. A lot of the games are just coming in at 2 hours now.
I agree that the pitch clock game is a wonderful addition. So I'm all for the pitch clock. I'm glad they did. I still can't watch a game. I cannot watch a full game. I can watch maybe an at bat or two at bats, and then I'm on to the next thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. Yep. It has to be a very riveting you know, situation. And even a World Series game, you know, I'm only in the last three innings or whatever, you know, if it's close.
Yeah.
Like, then I'm like, then I'm there, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's outside of that, I just can't do it. I can watch an at bat. I can watch an inning, maybe two. But it's because the other thing is everyone talks about the strategy of baseball and the this and the that and all this sort of stuff. There's really not a whole lot of stuff going on.
No.
I mean, it just isn't.
Right. Yeah, they have to fill time somehow. Yeah, you hear these the sort of wonky radio announcers talk about baseball IQ and, you know, pitch selection. And that was a cutter outside, you know, and how many times he throws the cutter. And it's like, okay, driving me crazy.
Don't get me wrong. There is a lot of strategy in baseball. I'm not saying that. But, I mean, I'm not saying there isn't strategy in baseball.
Yeah.
What I am saying is there's just not a whole lot going on.
Right.
You know.
Right. Well, that's what makes Jason Benetti such a great addition to the Tigers broadcast. I've had the Tigers on a fair amount this summer. I have the MLB app, and but a lot of times it's background noise or whatever. I'm just doing something else, and I have it. But he's really entertaining to listen to because you do get him talking about the game, but then you also get him, you know, having these sort of funny and interesting conversations about what's happening in the stadium, what they see, the stuff the players do, the things they hear on the team plane, joking with Dan Petrie. I mean, it's funny. It's very lively and sort of like, you know, it adds like a fresh element to it. You're not just like bored.
Out of your mind waiting for someone to do something.
The Mets broadcasts are also very entertaining. I mean, Keith Hernandez is hilarious.
Oh,
and
Keith,
Ron Darling is very knowledgeable. Yeah, and it's a good Gary, what's his name, the lead announcer. They're just very good. They mesh together very well, and it's entertaining.
Yeah, they do. They're really good. Mm-hmm. They're entertaining. It works.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are, by the way, White Sox fans, they are bitter about their current baseball announcer. Do they want Benetti back in the worst way?
Oh,
they are not. I mean, the team is miserable. All they do is lose.
Oof.
And on top of that, they hate the announcer. It is a bad combination.
Yeah. And there are some bad announcers. I've heard that guy. Yeah, it's painful. Yeah. And you have Steve Stone sitting with them, which Steve Stone is very well preserved. He's made of stone. Or something like. I thought the guy was very old. He was around when I was a little kid, like broadcasting the Cubs games with Harry Carey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was surprised to know that he's still there.
Yeah, same here. And they're talking about, New York Post is reporting that John Sterling, it is high, it is far, it is gone. coming back to call playoff games this year.
For the Yankees?
For the Yankees, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, their radio thing is quite painful because they hired these Gen Z guys that sound like they're from NYU radio to call the Yankee games. And I'm not trying to disrespect them, but, you know, it just sounds very – they all sound the same.
Yeah.
And then you have old Susan Waldman sitting there who – doesn't play well off of them. She played well off of John Sterling.
Sterling, yeah.
But not off of these guys. Yeah, it's just it's a complete.
I can't believe what my eyes have just seen.
yeah. Oh yeah. And then there's some bad announcers. I mean, Charlie Steiner on the Dodger broadcast. Oh God. I mean, Charlie Steiner was bad enough on ESPN. But it's 1,100 times worse on Dodgers radio. You know, when I was listening to a Dodgers playoff game last year, I couldn't keep listening to it. It was Charlie Steiner and his co-announcer, I think it was a former player, just lecturing me about how stressful and big this moment of playoff baseball is.
Yeah.
I don't need to hear that. I know that. I need more than that.
Great.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, we'll close the show on this sort of a more interesting, hopeful note about baseball. Shohei Ohtani.
Yes.
Does he go 50-50?
Very possible.
He's got, he's got, 45, 46 stolen bases, 445 home runs, got a month to get the rest.
I would say so, yep. Mm-hmm. And the Dodgers are now in a tight race with two teams. I saw the standings the other day, and San Diego and Arizona are right there on them, and they suffered a rash of injuries to their pitching staff.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe this was an interesting night. If you're a West Coast Spartan or you're checking it out or just watch a highlight later, I believe it was Shohei Ohtani's opening first night back in the Angel Stadium tonight playing.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a good highlight to watch.
Yeah, good highlight to watch. I hope he gets 50-50.
Yeah.
With all due respect to Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani is the biggest show in baseball.
Yes. Aaron Judge would say that. Did you see the All-Star game this year by chance, or any of the highlights?
I saw some of the highlights.
Okay. I thought the coolest moment and funniest moment was when Shohei Ohtani just drilled a home run out of the park they were playing in Texas. And Aaron Judge and Juan Soto were playing in the outfield, and they didn't even move. Like, they just watched it go and just sort of shrugged. They just looked up, and they were like, yeah, that's gone. We're not even making an effort to go to the wall. Like, that's out of here. And they were just marveling at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
that was funny.
That's funny. My favorite Shohei moment this year came from, I think it was earlier this week or maybe last week, where his dog threw out the first pitch. Did you see this?
No, I didn't see it.
It's great. So they put the ball, they put the dog out there, and they put the ball out there, and then the dog's just sitting there waiting for something to happen, and then Ohtani emerges, walks over to home plate, and crouches. The dog sees Ohtani crouching behind home plate, picks up the ball, and runs it over to him and drops it in Ohtani's glove. And then the dog gives Ohtani a high five.
Cool.
And that was the opening pitch. That was like the dog throwing out the first. It was great. And
Ohtani
had to you know, Tani had a treat ready to go for the dog and everything. It was fantastic.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know you're at the height of your powers as a star when you can get your dog to throw out the first pitch.
Right. Right. The Dodgers,
awesome.
That's cool. The Dodgers do some funny things sometimes. I remember a spring training game several years ago, you might recall, where they allowed Will Ferrell into the game to just sort of pitch like part of an inning.
Yes, yes.
And he was doing all this like all these typical pitcher things where he was like kicking the dirt a lot, going to the rosin every second, and then like,
yep.
You know, trying to show up the batters and say things or like, you know, looking around a lot, you know, and it was fantastic. Like, I love when baseball doesn't take itself so seriously sometimes and just allows sort of things like that.
Agreed.
Like that's great. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, completely agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And see, when baseball isn't taking itself seriously, it is an entertaining game.
Yeah.
But the problem is it just happens so infrequently.
Right. Right, exactly.
Shohei, he's the showman.
Oh, yeah.
He's it.
Yep, he's somebody that if you go see him play, you want to be in your seat when he's up to bat.
Yeah, and yeah. If he goes 50-50 this year, that could be, I mean, one of the greatest baseball seasons of all time by a batter.
Mm-hmm.
More impressive, to me, 50-50 is more impressive than hitting 62 home runs.
I agree, yeah. And considering also, too, the tumultuous start to the season. I mean, that whole thing with his interpreter stealing his money. And that looked like a really shaky, bad situation for him. Stunning for him to sort of come through that and have such a season. And the injuries where he can't pitch right now. Yeah, truly amazing.
He's... He is the show. I am looking. I have not seen him in person. He is the only player in baseball that I look at and say, yeah, I will pay. I mean, I will go to baseball games because I enjoy going to baseball games.
Mm-hmm.
In person. I just enjoy it. I find it much more entertaining in person than I do on TV.
Yeah.
But Shohei Ohtani is the only person that I want to actually see. I mean, I would go out of my way to pay money to see.
I agree. I think, you're on that. I think next year when the Dodgers come through D.C. like they always do, we need to find a way down there to see it.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Well, I think that's a good, hopeful note to end on. Let's go to watch Shohei Ohtani. And hopefully the Spartan defense plays like Shohei Ohtani next week, and we come up with a Michigan State victory.
Yes.
All right.
Let's make those Terp fans angry so that they say Aiden effing Childs or whatever, you know, like they did with Corey Lucius.
Corey freaking Lucius, huh?
Because all the Maryland Lucius. Football, they still talk about that. Because all the Maryland football fans are, I'm sure, convinced tonight that they're going to win the national championship.
Yeah. You know, it's delusional fan base, delusional students, you know, delusional. It's a place where delusions are born. All right. Well, that's it for this edition of Sparty Talk. We will be back next week. We didn't get to do an inappropriate lyrics.
We'll have to do that next week.
We will. So we debuted inappropriate lyrics in the last pod. We've got someone, but I'll just tease it and let all of you know that John Travolta is sort of involved in this.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Oh, DB's already figured it out.
I think so. I think I know.
All right. All right. On that note, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.